Hello, my name is Joshua McClelland, and I just want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. This podcast is a new thing, but it is going so well. You know, we have listeners in 18 different countries, and it's going from strength to strength. This week on the podcast, we'll have Andy Young. And before I talk about Andy's story, I should talk about the podcast that I did last week to sort of set up the podcast of Andy Young. I recorded with a man called Rodney Moore. Rodney Moore is from Ballymena. And he is a coach. He is a mixed martial artist coach. He was a professional fighter. And in my opinion, he is one of the pioneers of the sport in Northern Ireland. Rodney was a great guest. He talked about his story, his life. He talked about his fighters and the passion that he has for the game. You know, you'll recognise some of his fighters. Norman Park, who competes at KSW now. But Norman won the Ultimate Fighter and had some amazing fights in the UFC. He's also the coach of Reese McKee, who competes in the UFC. And I'll talk a wee bit about my guest today. So my guest today is a man called Andy Young. Andy Young is a two-time world champion. Andy's fought in Ukraine. He's fought all over the world. You know, he won his title over in Ukraine. He won his title in Northern Ireland at the Odyssey, now known as the SSE. We'll talk about a whole host of things. We'll talk about UFC cards coming up. We'll talk about the fantasy matchups in Kobe Covington versus Kamaru Usman. We talk about Stipe versus Francis, Francis versus John. Andy talks about how he sees those fights playing out. And then the week after, we're going to have John Hutchinson on. John Hutchinson is a coach over in Thailand. He coaches Peter Yan. Peter Yan is one of the best fighters in the world at the minute. He's on the pound for pound rankings. He's an incredible athlete, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that. We then have Mike O'Leary on. Mike O'Leary has had an incredible season for Ulster Rugby. Mike is a great guy and I'm really looking forward to talking to him. So let's begin. Welcome to Josh Talks. Andy, how are you today?
Good. Enjoying the you know, beautiful weather. So it's a great turn of season now, so it's time to get outside a bit more and enjoy kind of, you know, I was up this morning doing a bit of yoga and that, and just really capturing the day, so definitely helps with the sunshine.
I think it's looking positive as well, is the fact that it all seems to be coming to an end now with COVID. I think we're going to start coming out of this now pretty quickly.
I hope so, yeah. I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't be, given what's happened now, so staying very optimistic and positive about it. And you know, again, it makes us all very grateful, the small things in life that can't be taken away very quickly. So we got to appreciate everything. And when things do get back to normal, just treasure every little small thing.
So how have you found the last year and a half, 2 years with sort of everything that's going on?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone's got their, you know, the struggles and stuff with the massive change to general day-to-day life. For me, it's always been just about adapting and using whatever obstacles thrown at you as an opportunity and as a way to improve. So I made sure I kind of kept up to date with pushing myself and using what I could. So obviously everything was closed. So I got into running a bit more and ran a marathon for charity, which I had in the bucket list to do a marathon. So ticked that off and just continued to kind of to build up my own self-knowledge and to improve my coaching and my teaching and the knowledge base even more so for MMA. So when we do get restarted, they'll be able to offer, you know, a lot, you know, a higher degree of training, not just for myself, but for the students as well.
So for the people listening, you know, if they wanted to start with MMA or get into the training and stuff, you know, where can they find you?
Yeah, so the club is based in Bangor. I run it with my good friend and training partner, Arnold DeSantos. So the two of us run it, and we are dead center of Bangor, right opposite the training station. So there's no excuse for not being able to find it. Very, very simple, great location. We've got a lot of really, really cool stuff that we've managed to build and upgrade inside the gym. You know, very fortunate. We've got a lot of good people around us, and we were able to really help grow the gym even more so. Very excited to get it reopened, and yeah, hopefully not too long.
Have you heard anything about opening up yet or?
Well, there will be an announcement today. It's very still up in the air whether what direction it's going to go in. You know, we really hope in the next few weeks, you know, into May, we should be able to fully run. I think again, it's going by the data, and the data should suggest that this is the safest, one of the safer places to be would be actually, you know, in the gym, getting fit and healthy, as opposed to, you know, crowded shops.
Of course,
So hopefully.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's one of those ones that's been extremely strange in like every area of life. You know, everything's been sort of restricted. Now, me and my partner, we got married last week there.
Oh,
And
right. Well, congratulations.
thank you very much. And I think I'd say it was stressful for me, but it really wasn't. It was more stressful for her plan that.
I'm sure. Well, likewise, I'm getting married in September. So, fiance Stacey's just organized everything. And, you know, we're, like I said, very grateful things go the way we plan. But you know what? At the end of the day, like yourselves, it's just about 2 years.
That's it,
Doing the right
100%. Just get it sorted, get yourselves married, and just have the people closest to you. That's what we sort of, you know, just thought. Make sure my mom and dad, my nanny, granddad, and stuff were there, and the rest of my family. And then that was really it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Cool. So we'll start into it. How did you first get into MMA?
It was MMA was like a natural progression for me. I started very young in martial arts at about 5 years old. Did traditional jiu-jitsu, and then in my teenage years, I got a bit more competitive. So I started to do kickboxing and taijutsu and sports jiu-jitsu, and just doing a bit more competitive stuff. I mean, MMA wasn't really around as a sport until I was about 18 or 19. So at that stage, then I started looking for MMA clubs, and yeah, like first fight was, I think I was 20, and had a couple of fights, decided to go professional, and then moved up to train with my coach Rodney, and I've been with him ever since.
You mentioned there about like sports jiu-jitsu. So like I wouldn't know very much about that. I think the only time I've seen that was
Yeah.
with like Eddie Bravo. Is it more like open hand strikes and stuff or?
Yeah, it's a very strange sport. Like, it's near enough. I don't think really think it exists anymore. But at the time, sports jiu-jitsu was as close as I could find for MMA. It's basically, I don't know why they've named it that, but it pretty much means that it's like MMA, but point scoring. So if you land a punch, it's all semi-contact. If you land a punch, it's 2 points. A kick is three. A throw is five. A submission wins the round, not the match. So if you submit the guy, round two comes up and you have to do it all again. So it was great to be able to do all the movements from MMA, basically, but just obviously a semi-contact level. But it was a nice progression and a nice way to kind of transition up into full MMA competition whenever that appeared on the scene.
So when did you first get in contact with Rodney, or how did that come about?
Yeah, like I always kind of knew about Rodney when I started the sport. I mean, for me, I was living in Newtownards, and you know, Rodney's up in Ballymena. So the club I originally went to was in Belfast, Taijutsu MMA. Bunch of Taijutsu guys came together and made their own MMA club. So we kind of just figured it out ourselves. It was great, gym, absolutely loved it. Very kind of got a lot of toughness from training there. It was kind of a very Rocky style gym, leaky roof and the mats and stuff or something else. So it was great. It got you very conditioned to that tough mindset, and it was great. But on the scene, I always knew Rodney, and it was a very high level professional setup, a lot of great professional athletes and fighters. So a few fights into my pro career, I fought a good friend, Alan Philpott. Now, obviously at the time, Rodney was Alan's coach, and after that fight, approached Rodney and said, "Look, I want to make the transition to your club and join, because it's just I knew it was the right fit for me." I'd went up and trained a number of times with Rodney's throughout the years, just as invitationals and stuff, and went up and got on really, really well. It was a nice connection, nice vibes, and kind of always knew I would end up there.
I think like I've started hearing about Rodney, I'd say the last few years, and from even reading John Kavanagh's book and stuff, you know, Rodney comes across as one of the pioneers in Northern Ireland
Yeah,
for mixed martial arts. Even the
he
whole of
really
Ireland,
is.
he was one of the first.
Yeah, I mean, he's got like such a knowledge and mentality. It's very, very rare to see. And he's just been a phenomenal coach. And again, he is a good, a great coach, not just from his knowledge, but he leads by example. He'll be in there sparring, training with everyone. There's very few coaches these days that you'll see in there sparring with all the students, rolling with all the students, wrestling with all the students, like doing everything with them. And from heavyweights to flyweights, he spars and trains with everyone. So I think that's where a lot of respect comes from, that he's not afraid to get in there, and he's teaching, everything he knows all the time. And no matter what you have, he'll be able to sharpen your techniques. And he's been brilliant. I mean, we've traveled all over the world together, and it's just been phenomenal. So really, really grateful to have him as a coach.
What was it like, so obviously you were competing in sport jiu-jitsu, and then I assume you had your first like amateur MMA fight. What was that sort of transition like? Was it pretty easy because of the sports jiu-jitsu, or?
I mean, there's a lot of different elements to it. I mean, I would like to touch on even sides of mental health, and for me, I was always very insecure, a lot of shyness about me, and martial arts definitely helped with that. And I think martial arts was a way for me to kind of an outlet for kind of internal aggression and like internal kind of frustrations. And for me, along with all that, there was nerves of training, nerves of going to classes, a lot of anxieties. And I kind of to have when I had my first fight, I was so happy before the fight because I wasn't sick. I would be sick before training classes. I was that nervous, and I wasn't for the first fight, so that was a bonus for me. So yeah, it was a very surreal moment to go in there and to compete. And for me, like it was just as soon as I had the first fight, the adrenaline and the feeling was just incredible. And I knew that obviously with the nerves, if I can immerse myself into a scenario like that with like a full MMA fight, then that would just make me grow like so much more in a lot of ways. So after that first fight, I kind of just sprung up and just kind of started leapfrogging with more confidence, and had another fight a few months later and got the win, big knockout in front of the whole hometown crowd. And yeah, to complete turning point for me, and like just really give me such a real sense of purpose, and that was like 100% my biggest passion in life, and to compete and to do that. So it was just a real realization moment of this is what I'm meant to be doing right now. This is my passion in life.
I think a whole lot of people can relate to what you're saying, not just in mixed martial arts, but any organized like sort of sport and activity. It's always the thoughts like, well, you go to football or rugby or any of these sort of things. It's always when you're thinking before training, the very first time you go, it's, am I good enough to do this? Am I going to be embarrassed when I show up? Are the people going to be nice there? It's all these thoughts you sort of think about, and you sort of build it almost up in your head. And then when you actually do it, the more you get used to it, the easier it becomes.
Exactly. And that's a case of like voluntary discomfort. And I keep, kept throwing myself into things that made me feel nervous, or if I was training at different clubs or meeting new people or doing things outside the comfort zone. Because the more and more you did that, the more and more confident and more energy you got. And as the fights went on, I got more and more confident. And now I can be in the locker room falling asleep before fights, and I'm that relaxed. So everything, it's sometimes step back and look and go, wow, like I've came so far. And it's something as well a lot of people don't do with themselves. Celebrate your accomplishments and remember where you came from, and what you've managed to transform yourself into. Because a lot of people don't take a time to do that.
So when you were having your like your amateur fights and you're obviously doing well, when was it the natural progression to sort of turn pro?
Well, I had a really great knockout victory over a French fighter. He came over, and we competed in Balmain, actually. Forget the name of the hotel, but it was a great fight, and it was a really dominant performance, one of the best performances I had had. And with a big knockout win behind me, I was kind of like really on a high, and I was like, I need to like really take this as far as I can now. And with that win behind me, with the confidence, I was like, let's just go for it. Like, let's go pro and see what I can do. And if I'm knocking people out, I might as well get paid for it.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, was that like a sort of conversation that you went to with Rodney, or did you sort of made up your own mind about that?
Yeah, well, when I went pro, it was with my previous club. And those guys kind of had just guided me the right way and just said, yeah, like if you want to compete pro, might as well. I mean, back in those days, amateur and pro, there wasn't really a massive difference. My second amateur fight, probably 25 minutes before the fight started, the referee came in to say, the rules have changed, you can throw elbows now and knees.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, right, okay. And the rounds are now 5 minutes long. So it was pretty much a full professional fight under today's rules. Mm-hmm. So it was a different time. So the border between the two, amateur and pro, wasn't really much different. So yeah, like for me, it was again, like I was young and wanted to really compete and test myself and had that testosterone about me. So in hindsight, I probably should have waited a wee bit longer. But you know, you learn and you grow as you go. So yeah, it was just for me at the time, it felt it was the right time to go pro.
So at an amateur level in Northern Ireland, in Great Britain, would the rules be different from the professional game? So you were saying there about throwing elbows, is that just completely not allowed or?
Yeah, so no, this was like, I mean, I had my first fight like 10 or 11 years ago. So back in those days, yeah, the rules were just like all over the place. Certain shows had just created their own thing. Generally speaking, there was no ground and pound, you know, strikes on the floor. Gloves were a wee bit different, things like that, no elbows. And then as you went pro, that was all allowed. But again, it differed on what show you were fighting on and what rules. And it was all very different. But now it's very set in stone. It's amateurs, you know, they no elbows, certain submissions aren't allowed, bigger gloves on, and then professionals, everything. But yeah, like there's a strong divide between the two now.
I think it's even the same sort of in the professional game, depending on the promotion. Like I think in the UFC there, you had Peter Yan where he got disqualified for a knee. And yeah. Then it was, I think Mighty Mouse was fighting there on the weekend. And then then he got knocked out by the knee.
And this is the thing too. It's like, you know, part of me is like, because Mighty Mouse was so used to fighting under the rules the UFC has, you do forget that when you're coming up on a single leg the way it was, you're exposed to that knee, and you're not used to that being thrown. Even in training, like it's very hard to throw knees or elbows controlled. It's not really going to happen. So you're not used to seeing those shots coming. And then when it happens in a fight, it definitely catches you unaware. So there's the argument for knees should be allowed on the ground, but yeah, you can see the devastation it can cause there, but yeah, rules can make a huge difference.
What would be your preference on rules, Seth?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice when you're not on the receiving end, you know, but I mean, I know back in the day, Pride FC, there was no elbows, but you could soccer kick to the and stamp on the face. But the thing was with elbows, and I found that in fights, elbows can just, you know, finish the fight or cause a crazy amount of damage. And a lot of time, it's not even so much technique. You can just turn a certain way and just slice someone, and then that cut fights, you know, fight stopped. Or for me, actually, two world title fights I had, I felt that I was doing fine, doing well. It was quite debatable about decisions, and then I got cut last minute of the fight, and because of the blood and the damage, that was, you know, in favor of the other fighter. So it can be quite a frustrating thing, and again, scar tissue damage. So elbows, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, it just depends. It's nice when you're on the, you know, not on the receiving end of it, but I do think knees to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind putting those in, because again, you can get away with shooting for a takedown, and you know, if it fails, no big deal. But if there's knees to the floor, if you sprawl on someone, you can land one or two of those and it'll make them think twice. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I mean, for sure the biggest one would be the 12 to 6 elbow.
Yeah.
Which is for some reason still banned in the UFC, and Joe Rogan goes on about it a lot, but that should be completely fine.
Yeah, so, the whole John Jones, the DQ.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean that should be changed, like for sure. So, but I do believe that rules will change as time goes on. I probably well could see the UFC putting in knees. I think for a long time the rules were put out there because they didn't want to look too mad, too aggressive, because they were still struggling to get mainstream, trying to teach fans about the sport. And if you see someone kneeing someone to the head, that can put a lot of people off. But the sport's mainstream now, so I think they could probably get away with it.
Do you know the thing has changed quite a bit from this, and just with COVID and stuff, which has given people, fans like myself, a completely different aspect. Obviously, it'd be completely different for you because you're experiencing it. But when you're actually listening to these events going on, you can hear the shots land, you can hear the impact, and it's a completely different experience. You know, it's completely different. It makes it a lot more real, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Like it's a very unique thing, and I think it can affect the fighter in a good way or a bad way. Some people thrive off the crowd and the noises and that extra maybe adrenaline, and then other fighters are the opposite, and you know they feel without a crowd they can perform better, and they just feel like they're in their own gym maybe training, and they can kind of it just takes a lot of pressure off perhaps. So I mean maybe that's the reason, because McGregor always talks about crowd and pressure, and the more he has, the better he performs. And of course, his last fight, there was no crowd, and or very limited crowd, and that affected him, I think, perhaps. So,
What did you think about the McGregor fight?
yeah, I mean, I felt similar to my fights where it became a wee bit too dominant in the boxing, and that affected my stance, same way it was affecting his. So, it was a bit too boxing stance, and he was susceptible to those calf kicks. So very, very smart by Poirier. And again, I've been on the receiving end a couple of those kicks to the calf. That's enough to kind of really limit your movement. And it was a really deciding factor for Poirier getting the win there.
I think it's one of those ones as well, for obviously when you're talking about Conor McGregor and stuff, he's got so many different eggs and different baskets. And the fact of, like, you know, there was the fight with Mayweather where he was out of the game for quite a bit training boxing, and then it was rumored that he had something agreed with Pacquiao there. You know, it's hard. I can imagine that. Obviously I would have no experience myself, but from switching disciplines, you know, back and forth, so many different techniques and
I know. I mean, that's the thing. It's because we have to do everything. You know, obviously, it's tricky to have enough time to focus just on one thing at a time. But you know, you always get drawn to probably one part of MMA more so than the others. Just everyone's got their own preferences. But yeah, he kind of started off kind of as a boxer, if you know what I mean. So he always enjoyed that, and yeah, I mean, he did himself, you know, a good service fighting the best in the world, and relatively short notice as well, if all things considered. I think there wasn't that long of a training camp for it.
We'll move back in and we'll talk about your career then. So obviously you fought for two world titles, but what was the build up before that?
Yeah, I mean, I was riding a good win streak. I got three British titles over the course of a year, and was going into the fight for my first world title. Ended up in a pretty controversial decision. So that was a loss, and then I was immediately given an opportunity to fight for a world title in Ukraine, in Kiev. So myself and Arno, we headed off to Kiev, and again, very surreal, but very exciting too. Just some part of the world I never thought I'd be in, and went in to fight the hometown favorite, and won the second round TKO. So that was at that point, you know, that was just one of the best moments and biggest highlights. You know, just to stand in the crowd and to have that belt, and it was just a real sense of satisfaction, and kind of performing the way I knew I could, and getting that belt. And then soon after, it was only 2 3 months after, I got another world titles opportunity to fight in Belfast, in my hometown. So that was a crazy build up. You know, that was a lot of you know, press and coverage and interviews and everything, and there was a real storm, media storm. So it was great to kind of experience all that too, and I had so much confidence and so much momentum going into that fight. And I took on a really dangerous opponent who had been knocking people out completely cold, which is quite rare at flyweight, just given the weight division. But he was putting people out cold, and a lot of people were worrying about me and, you know, close friends and family and stuff. But, you know, I just said, look, I've got this, and went then and got the win in the third round. So yeah, that was definitely the highlight of my life and career. There's nothing like winning a world title in front of your whole family and friends and, you know, hometown crowd. That was something else.
I was looking for your Instagram and I saw it was the big massive billboard, and I think it was you for the first world title. That must have been insane just seeing that.
I didn't know it was there, and it was again a friend Arno who just sent me this. He's like, because I kind of, when I accepted the fight, I didn't really look too much into my opponent or the show or anything. I just focused on my training, and it was only him. He sent me a video being like, do you realize you've got your face on this huge billboard in Kiev? And I was like, all right. So it was a very strange feeling, like, but yeah, it was that's something else, mate, you know. So yeah, a lot of good stories out in Kiev and stuff. So great place to compete now. But that was a funny moment.
So when you were out in Kiev, you know, how close to the fight did you actually fly over?
It was, let's say, if I fought Saturday night, I think they got me over on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So it's normally to give you a day or two, because, you know, you have to cut weight and get your weight down. I did try a couple of sneaky tricks in the book, and they told me there was no bath in my room to get the salt bath. I later found out that every other room had a bath, really, bar mine. Of course, that when you fight the hometown guy, sometimes you will get things like that happening. I went to use the sauna, and it was completely turned off. So I had to sit into it while it was heating up, and I had to cut all my weight inside the sauna. So that was 4 or 5 kilos of sweat I had to get out of me, and I was seeing stars by the end of it. So that was a good learning process for me, and really helped with like, you know, further weight cutting and stuff. But yeah, that was a tight one. And even getting water, the water bottles out there in Kiev, it was like, I don't know, it was like £10 for like a couple of 2 liter bottles of water. It was like really, really expensive. Like beer was cheaper.
Yeah.
So part of me was kind of like, should I just hydrate with beer instead? I don't know. But but yeah, very, very strange place. Like, but yeah, it was some build up.
So what do you think about weight cuts? You know, I think it's, is it one that's doing like the hydration tests? Is it one?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Haven't heard too much about that. Like, but that, I think that it's been something that's been going on for a while. Like, I think even in the contract, there are certain contracts, you can only put on so much percent of your body weight back on, which I do think is quite good. You know, they should do a weigh-in the day of the fight, say, and you shouldn't be able to put on, you know, if you're fighting it, if I'm fighting at 57 kilo, and I walk into the fight at over 70 kilos, then that's an insane cut. And, you know, I definitely think in terms of your own health, and then essentially your 3 or 4 weight divisions above, you know, possibly your opponent, it doesn't really make sense in any front. So I think that is the hydration kind of testing would be really good, on the weigh-ins on the day perhaps of the fight. I mean, the only reason they don't do that is obviously if someone missed weight and it's the day of the fight, you know, what do? You got less time to get anything organized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that's probably the big downfall, and it's probably why, is one of the reasons why same day weigh-ins probably won't happen, because it's too much stress on the promoter
I mean, I did it before. I fought in Thorpe Park actually in England, and well, that's actually quite a good story. The background of that was I couldn't find a fight for a long time. I was absolutely starving to get a fight, really, really wanted one, and got this fight finally set up, and I was absolutely buzzing. Then I was training and noticed like a side of my face getting really sore and starting to kind of swell up, but just ignored it and kept training. And then I was down one morning, it was about 6 in the morning, I was training with my friend, and he's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. He's like the whole side of my neck was up in a big lump, and he's like, you don't look too good there. And I was like, I'll be right. So I trained through the session anyway, and I thought, well, I'll go to the doctor anyway and get an opinion. And he looked at me, he's like, you've got mumps. And I was like, right. And I was like, well, but I'm fighting here in like 10 days. And he's like, nah, you're not. You can't do that. You can't fight like that. And I was like, we'll see about that. So I immediately kind of went to a health store and just bought everything I could think of that might boost my immune system. And just like every part of me was just willing myself to get better. And I did recovered. Went out there, and I was obviously I couldn't really eat that much, so my weight. Sorry, I couldn't eat. I had to eat more. Sorry to get my weight or my energy up to fight this virus or whatever I had. So, when it came to the weigh-in, I was like, "Shit, this is going to be tricky to get down to 57 here." I wonder if my opponent, who I knew was about the same weight as me, would do an on-the-day weigh-in, 61, and he agreed. So thank God, because of that, I didn't have to cut anything. So I was able to keep the strength up a bit more. So we weighed in on the morning of the fight, and then came back and fought that evening and got the win. So that was good background actually. Yeah, I don't think I've shared that too much with people, but that was a pure example of just desire to compete, just kind of like outweighed everything else, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, it'd be it's very difficult doing anything when you're not well. Like, very, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing too, is that actually some of my best performances have been when I've not been 100%. You know, I've had near enough a broken hand and title fights, and I've won and performed really well. I think it's because it takes pressure off when I know that, well, like I'm injured, so I have to really switch on because I'm not 100%. I have to be really sharp here. You know, I can't afford any mistakes. Where sometimes you feel 100%, you get a wee bit too confident, and you're like, oh no, I'm great here. There's, you know, my performance will be fine no matter what here. But it gives you a bit of fear almost because you know you're injured or sick that you have to really up your game.
It's one of those things, like when you listen to, I think it's like Brendan Schaub, Joe Rogan, all those sort of people talk about it, and they talk about mixed martial arts, they talk about it, and it's like if you zip or zag wrong, that's it, it's done. It can be
Yeah.
like it's out, and it's a game with deadly consequences.
It is. And I think that's the kind of frustrating thing I've had to get my head around. And you know, my record's just so up and down. And a lot of time you have, you know, bad decisions and all the rest of it. But I mean, I even had a decision loss where after the fight, the judges publicly said on Facebook and that I made the wrong call and they should have won, blah blah blah. But it's the way the sport goes. You can't overturn things like that, I guess. And frustrating, but again, it's on me. I shouldn't let it go to the decision, and you're always kind of in control to an extent. But it is a crazy game, and losses are so easy to get.
When we're talking about judges, especially fighting at the professional, would you get more money, etc., for wins? Or is it sort of
Some
50-50?
shows, yeah. Most shows probably would do you a win bonus, so you get a money to show up and then a win bonus. But again, it should just be a standard amount, no matter what, win or loss, you know, and then maybe a performance bonus, perhaps, you know. But it does put a lot of extra added pressure and stuff on, which can be a good thing, I guess. But yeah, generally, people will actually get a bonus for the win.
I suppose it's very difficult as well, because you're turning up the fight, you've put in a good performance on the night, which you feel that you should have won. Your coaches think you've won, maybe the people in the audience think you've won as well, and you get a bad decision, and then that's you going home with less money.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, the money's the last thing in the back of your head.
Yeah.
You're just so gutted. I mean, that time I lost that decision, I was just, you know, I was in bits. I mean, straight away, I was like, I'm done. I'm never fighting again. You know, screw this shit. Like, I should have had that one, and I got screwed over, and screw the sport, and blah blah blah. And I was just in such a state, you know. So, you know, my coaches and team had to kind of calm me down a bit, and I had a fight 2 weeks later. So I put my focus into that, and I just went like, you know, full feral training mode. Like, and that's actually the reason I've got a beard now. I thought, fuck this, you know. I was clean shaven, and I was like, nah, like I'm just gonna go fucking feral here and grow the beard out, just go animal here, and just go in and kill this guy. So I went in 2 weeks later and got the win, and I've kept the beard ever since.
Got the beard, grown it longer.
Yeah. So it's another wee fun backstory to some of the fights.
100%. So then you had a you went over to Team Alpha Male for one of your camps.
Yeah. I was after the world title won in Belfast, I went off and trained out there for a couple of months. So that was just amazing. Like one of the best training camps I've had. And the guys at Alpha Male, especially Uriah, like he's the nicest guy I've ever met. Like the dude's so chilled out and very, very real and down the earth, you know. Really made his made an effort to take me out, show me about, and treat me like really well. So really great guy, and awesome training camp. Came back completely different.
What was it actually like over there? Because I suppose it's a completely different lifestyle as well.
Yeah, I mean, I had been previously at Alliance Training Center with Dominic Cruz years before that with Norman Park, and that was a real eye-opener. That definitely transformed me and changed me completely. So I had been away multiple times for training camps, so I kind of got used to the vibe and how it felt and stuff. So I was well ready for it, and off fresh off world title win, the confidence was there. So I think because I went in with so much momentum, it really helped. But yeah, the training is, 3 times a day, every day. You're surrounded by absolute savages, everyone on the mats in the UFC or whatever. So you got to really stay on top of your game. But I was ready for it all, and just lapped it up, like really soaked up the energy.
What made you go to Team Alpha Male? What made you think about that, Jim?
Yeah, well, I was kind of sitting after the world title thinking about where I should go and what I should do. And I thought, well, I've got the money from the title win there, and I've got a lot of momentum. I think it's a nice time to get away and train, in preparation for a fight rather than kind of wait around. So I thought about where to go, and I was thinking maybe TriStar and AKA things like that. But Alpha Male was it's always somewhere really interesting to me, and plus it's generally based for lighter weight divisions. So I knew there's a lot of guys maybe my size I could train with, so it suited really well.
And then what was the actual coaching like for, was it your IFA that was running it all, or was it split between his coaches and
Yeah, there's a lot of different coaches and stuff. Your eye would take some of the classes. You had Clay Guida would jump in sometimes, or some of the top names. But again, I had specific wrestling coaches, jiu-jitsu coaches, Chris Holdsworth does jiu-jitsu, and boxing coaches and stuff. So everyone was very high level, and really, really enjoyed the training. But yeah, it was intense, very, 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 very intelligent training too. After each session, you'd have kind of a yoga kind of mobility instructor come in and take you through stretches, and everyone would make sure you're looking after yourself and not getting injured. And it was intelligent training.
when you were over there, because you didn't really know the people as such, like on a personal level when you first arrived, was there any people, like trying to make their mark, going for knockouts and sparring and, so that's just sort of headhunting?
Most, like I'll say 99% of people were great, but anywhere in the world, doesn't matter what, you can go into gyms in this country, it won't matter. You're always going to get egos. You're always going to get one or two dickheads that just want to prove a point. And I remember sparring a guy, and he was like 4 weight divisions up from me. And especially in MMA and stuff like that, when you're sparring and you're throwing stuff, you have to generally be controlled if you're fighting someone smaller than you. So, we were sparring, and rather than go kind of controlled, he was just throwing full power into everything. And he was throwing a lot of spin attacks, spin kicks, spin, shots. And they're the ones that can really catch you and knock you out. So I think he was trying to prove a point. And yeah, that was kind of annoying, but a lot of the kind of coaches and people call them out on it and stuff. And but you'll get egos like that. That'll just happen, so it is what it is. But again, for me, it's like there's no point me getting into a full scrap and a brawl here. I'm definitely going to sustain significant damage from that no matter what the outcome, and it won't look good. So it's just one of those things that happens sometimes.
I think one of the most interesting videos that I've seen, and it was a long, long time ago, and it was a video of John Jones sparring, who I arguably think is the GOAT, like the greatest of all time, for what he's done. And he was sparring someone, like he was sparring another fighter, and I didn't recognize the fighter. I don't think he fought in the UFC or anything, but the guy went just full blown at John Jones and hit him quite hard, and John Jones just sort of stopped the sparring session and went like, I'm not going to spar you if I can't trust you, and sort of just moved on, walked past. And like if you think about it, like John Jones probably could have really hurt the fella, but instead
Yeah, I think
sort of went, that's it.
that's the exact point was actually going to think about making there. The best way of dealing with scenarios like that is just to call them out. If someone's going too hard, rather than go back hard at them, which, like I said, would guarantee probably some damage taken on both parties, and doesn't really solve anything, just calling them out on it and saying, you're going too hard. You know, we're not fighting, we're sparring. If you want to fight, we can fight, but this is a sparring session. We're learning and training here. And just make them look stupid in front of everyone, you know, because again, most people though will just fight back with ego. But I mean, I've been in scenarios like that too, and I've had to just call someone out on it and be like, look, you know, you said we're doing a light spar, you're going as hard as you can. I've got a fight coming up. I'm going to get injured possibly. It's not worth it. So, you know, train with someone else while I'm training with you.
Yeah, I can agree more with what you're saying. And it's one of those ones as well that when you're talking about a professional, when the professional game, that is your job. It's your livelihood. Yeah. And you can't really have someone mess about with that.
And that's the problem, is that when you get, you know, guys that are a wee bit younger coming up and stuff, you know, yes, you maybe got a target on your back, but they're also, they don't really, it's a very hard to get through to them sometimes and make them realize, like, look, we're not fighting here. It's like, it's a different thing. Just, we need to be smart, and this is a profession, and, you know, this is my livelihood. It's maybe not yours. You're doing maybe this for a hobby, and you're fighting just for a bit of crack every now and again, but if this is my career, like, you can't mess with that, you know. And yeah, people sometimes just don't get it, you know. So that's it. The best way is just calling them out and explaining to them that that's what's happening right now, instead of resorting with ego, you know.
Am I right in saying that you studied psychology at university?
Yeah.
How do you think that's played a part in your career?
Yeah, it's really, really helped. I think obviously the mental side of it and your mind is the most paramount of importance with life, and, you know, especially with fighting, because it's just such a tough sport. So I think having that grasp of psychology and kind of that science background's really, really helped with me kind of being involved in my mindset and figuring things out the right way, and being open to training, you know, mental type of like CBT kind of work and like all different things. But I think the, you know, Stoic philosophy is just something I really follow now. And the beginning, like, Stoic philosophy is basically what CBT and a lot of modern day psychological methods are based on. So I love that, and I've been studying that, you know, previous years, and that really made a change for me. And a lot of Ryan Holiday's like books, and Obstacle is the Way, it's like a lot of great great stuff out there. And like I said, it's the mind that I'll focus on, you know, most first, because it's the body will follow the mind, so you need to have the mind right.
When you're getting ready for a fight, and all the pressures of just your general day-to-day life, all the stuff outside fighting, and then all the stresses that come with the fight, the anxieties that come with that, you as a fighter, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's different, like, practical things I can do. I suppose one of them would be a lot of visualization. So you just do the run-through of the fight, and you use, to make it more real, you use all your senses. So you imagine, you know, the noise of, you know, being in the locker room, the noise of pads getting hit, and the background noise of the crowd, and the smell of Vaseline when you're getting that put on your face before you walk into the cage, you know, so you've got, you're kind of activating all your senses to make it a real thing in your head. You imagine walking out, stepping in, and playing out the match in your head, but not just you going in and winning in 5 seconds, you know, because if that doesn't happen, then that's where you start to panic. It's kind of visualizing that, visualizing a decision win, visualizing getting knocked down but coming back, visualizing getting out of a submission, like every scenario, but you always come out on top. And when you start to play that over and over and over again, eventually then when you're in that locker room, you imagine, I've been here before, I know how this plays out, and it really helps settle your nerves.
I suppose that's a great thing you can do. And I think a lot of professional athletes are starting to do that as well. Yeah. I think probably the most famous one that I've heard about is, you know, like Messi talking about when he's playing for Barcelona, and he talks about how he's on the bus and he's going to training, or he's traveling to away games, just constantly picturing what's going to happen, what he's going to do. And, you know, yeah, just keep going through that in his head. I suppose it's a great way to steady nerves as well.
It is. I mean, it's something you can do anywhere, anytime. And it has been a huge help for me, and it's really, really helped. Like I said, it makes me feel familiar with the environment, and that extra confidence that I've seen this happen. And another thing I had done was to help with that visualization, I would get a picture of me and my opponent, and construct like a Photoshop image of me winning and having that decision win or whatever, knockout win or whatever it was, but my hand being raised beside my opponent. And I would find a picture maybe where he's lost the fight. So he's going to be in this pose where he's looking down after a loss. And then I'd be up with the win and I'd have that picture on Photoshop and I'd print it and have it sitting there so I could really see physically me and my opponent and me as the winner. And that really, really helped.
See, when you're going through your visualization and you're imagining how the fight's going, do you find that your adrenaline starts to fire automatically when you're going through it?
The heart rate goes up, and that will happen to fighters as they get closer to a fight. You'll start to obviously think about the fight, and then you naturally start to play it out in your head, and you start to get that adrenaline going, the nerves, the excitement. Like, but you know, for me, I'll try and pick and choose when I do that. You know, try and control that and conserve the energy and just keep it. You know, for actual time periods where I want to focus on visualization, because if you don't control it, sometimes you can get a wee bit burnt out, or you can start to get too nervous, or you get too much adrenaline going before session, or you start to have more doubts because you're thinking about everything like spontaneously and without direction. So it can go bad sometimes, and you can burn yourself out. So like I said, overthink. So I try and control it and take specific times to work on that.
Do you think your mindset sort of changes? Say you're 12 weeks out from a fight, the fight's been agreed, you know that you're fighting. Does your mindset have to change when you're going into that 12 weeks? Like, I was listening to, I think it was Max Holloway, and he was talking to Joe Rogan. I don't know if you've heard the episode, but he was talking to Joe Rogan, it was quite recent, and he was sort of talking about, like, for those 12 weeks I go into crazy land, you know, I'm not nice to be around, you know, I'm quite difficult to be around, and you say the wrong thing to me, you know, I'm ready to fight. You know, he was talking just about that, those 12 weeks, and how it's completely different from the rest of his life.
No, there's 100% a switch. As soon as I get a fight announced, there's a switch, and it's right away. It's like, right, put down any chocolate. You know, no beers anymore. You know, everything is just focused. Training goes up. You know, you get up earlier, you do a bit more, and you've got the reason now. You've got that real goal set up, and it's like, right, now this is time to be doing this now. You know why you're doing it, even more so. So it definitely gives you that fire. And when you're in training, then you can start to visualize that fight, and you know, you push a wee bit more, and it definitely, you know, puts a switch on your mindset and body. And I find a huge difference. I can't really say now, but it was kind of offered a, you know, a couple of fights there. So even with the offer of a fight, I started training the went straight down to the gym, did a workout, and you know, it definitely creates a flip, you know, and you flip that switch and you get a different mindset entirely. Again, I'll try and compartmentalize and have my training and home life slightly separate. So I'm not taking it out on my fiance. Like when I've had a bad day's training and being all grumpy, I'll just be like, right, it's happened, you know, we'll move forward and we'll just go for a walk and calm down a bit, you know. Because it can be a very emotional thing with if you have a bad training session, and just trying to keep it, you know, in the gym, or you know, deal with it the right way.
Combat sport, it's completely different from every other, from most sports, you know, in the sense of you play football, you play rugby, you play American football, you go for the list of them. It's a team game, and you can have a good performance and still lose, or a bad performance and still win. But, you know, when you're fighting, it's, you know, that's your responsibility. You know, you're bearing that, you know, like, you're the one competing.
Yeah, 100%. And like you said there, you know, you can have a bad performance and win, or a good performance and lose, you know, and that's all you can really focus on, is as long as you're happy with how you've done things. I mean, I've had wins that I've been annoyed about and been upset about because I haven't performed, or I've had losses, but I felt that I fought my best that night, and I'm fine with them, you know. So it depends entirely kind of on, you know, how you kind of approach things.
Another thing I want to talk to you about is, so obviously we've got a couple of real big. Did you watch the Francis and Stipe fight? How did you see that playing out before it?
I thought Stipe would probably get a bit more grappling on the go and maybe do what he similar stuff to the last fight. I know he's a wee bit slow maybe to start, but I thought if he can wear him down a bit, you know, he can maybe get a decision win or whatever out of it. But I mean, Ngannou's just showed a completely different level there. He was a lot more controlled and took his time, and his wrestling was on point, and you know, very mature performance. And again, you know, he was a he had Stipe rocked, and Stipe was very close to catching him with his counter shot, which he had knocked out people before with. But again, Ngannou was kind of wise to it and was able to get the finish. But that's heavyweight for you, and I'm glad I don't fight at that weight division, because it doesn't matter who you are, like, just one shot at that weight division, especially, that's the end of the fight.
I seen on his Instagram, he stuck a picture up of him just hitting pads, and you see how scarily big Ngannou is. Like he's a freak. Like he's just massive.
Oh, it's insane. But again, this is what people ask me, how long does it take to fight and blah blah blah. It's like, it's there's no set times. It's the individual. It's like, how much do you want it? You know, where's your desire at? You know, what's your mindset like? You know, your physical gifts, your genetics, like, oh, there's a lot of factors here. Like, and there's Ngannou, you know, not that long into the sport, and he's the UFC heavyweight champion, you know. So a lot of that's gonna be humble beginnings and sand, like, was he training in sand, like working in sand mines or something? All this kind of thing. So I think a lot of that kind of built the mindset as well as physical, you know, attributes. And he's just got that natural athleticism and all these other gifts. But again, the desire and all the rest of it is a big factor for him. But this is where, no matter what happens, like, you need to see things as an opportunity. You know, him growing up like that, maybe didn't see it like, oh, this is a good thing, I'm doing this, you know, working on a sand mine. But again, that maybe got him so strong mentally, so strong, humble, and all these things helped them to maybe get to where he is.
It is crazy hearing you talk about it. Like I remember hearing the story and hearing how, you know, he's working in the sand mines, how he had to flee the country, how he was eating money so people couldn't find it, being arrested, being deported to the desert, coming back, I think it was to Spain, getting arrested in Spain, then going to France, living in a car park while he was training. You know, but it shows you the desire there to make his life better.
Exactly. So when you know, if you give me a guy that's got that much hunger to compete, it really, you know, that really is the deciding factor. You can get a black belt jiu-jitsu and, like, you know, a great striker and everything, but if they go and they fight not really wanting to be there, not much desire to win, just kind of coasting against someone that really really wants it and is going after it, like, it's very hard. I mean, that's I'll take that guy, and, you know, as the favorite any day.
I was talking to Rodney and I was talking to Rodney about sort of like the European circuit for mixed martial arts, and I was sort of talking along the lines of, you know, a lot of people who are professional athletes from over here and Europe have said, you know, it's a lot harder to get into the UFC from Europe because it's a harder road. There's a lot fiercer competition.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely change, you know, again, there's a lot of old school kind of mentality out here, and people just fought the toughest people they could find all the time. There was no real, you know, basis of, like, the way sometimes it'd be done in America, just building your record up and getting your resume up and getting easy wins. Didn't really do that over here, you know, especially the likes of Rodney. He just fought anyone anytime, and yeah, like, that's definitely influences things. And I'm part of that, I could say. Like, you know, I was jumping in a bit too eager with fights, and, you know, should have took my time.
But suppose it makes you a lot more experienced as well, you know, because you've seen it all, you've faced it all, you know, there's no reason to get nervous any. Well, obviously you're still going to get nervous, but you know, you've lived through it.
I think that's the thing, is that, you know, the more time you have, you know, in the sport, like, there's more things I've learned, and because I've essentially seen it all, been, you know, done everything, you know, that way, nothing's going to be novel to me now. Well, not that nothing will be, but I've experienced so much that I've got that a lot of kind of familiarity, sorry, with everything. So I can, you know, just enjoy the moment a bit more when I'm competing, and it definitely helps with everything. So yeah, I mean, that's I say the toughest thing will probably be your first fight, because it is new and you've never maybe done it before. But after that, it gets easier.
Just on what we were talking about, I'm pretty sure, and I could be wrong, that I think Norman fought as a Gamrot.
Yeah.
And I think he just made his debut in the UFC, if I'm not
Yeah, he
wrong.
looked very good, like very, very sharp. Great, he got a knockout win, I think.
And I thought Norman did very, very well in the fights that he had.
Yeah, I mean, Norman's one of those guys that could be, you know, when I was training out there at Alliance with him, like he rocked up fresh from winning the Ultimate Fighter. But again, he hadn't really been out there training with all top American fighters. And I thought, oh, how's he going to get on? He's taken down Michael Chandler. He was, you know, out sparring, you know, Ross Pearson, and he was like smashing guys. And I was like, fuck, you know, he has some potential. And yeah, I think it was just unlucky with the matchups he got in the UFC. If he got more exciting fighters maybe to compete against, sometimes it takes the matchup to really make the fighter, because you get the wrong matchup and it's a wrestling, you know, kind of snooze fest. You go under the radar. You know, if he got the right matches, he might have got a little bit further with the UFC, but you know, it's hindsight now, and it's all learning at the end of the day, you know.
I think one of the matches, he was meant to fight Masvidal, or that was, I don't know, that was the rumour, and then that bout got cancelled, and I think as a replacement, it was Gleison Tibau.
Remember that, yeah.
Came in, and Gleison Tibau, I think at that time, had fought absolutely everybody. Like, he fought Khabib.
I was going to say, I think the Khabib fight, I think it was very close. I think a lot of people thought Tibau beat Khabib.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what I remember, I mean, Khabib didn't take him down. He was one of the only few people. Khabib couldn't get him down on the floor. So that shows you how good T-Boy is. And Norman had a great fight against him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is good. And then Reese recently competed in the UFC as well. You know, so I think Rodney and the gym, it's going incredibly well in Northern Ireland. And it's starting to really show, because you're seeing people like yourself and a lot more professional athletes who are all starting to compete at that level and get recognition.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. You see, when you look at the country and all, doesn't, you know, even the UK, it's like Rodney's had, you know, multiple people now in the UFC, Bellator, you know, multiple world champions. You know, he's had a resume of people he's trained and have got to the very top. You know, so that just shows you know, the level he's at, and his guidance and stuff has brought so many people there. I mean, the amount of talent on the mat sometimes is insane.
And what do you think? Do you think Northern Ireland as a whole, as a country, it's progressing a lot more? Because I think Northern Ireland's sort of known for boxers and people who play golf. You know, like that's where our sportsmen excel. And do you think that the switch is starting to turn now, where you want to see a lot more people from Northern Ireland compete at that highest level?
Yeah, I think that the media is starting to accept MMA more. So I think, again, you know, this is only the beginning of it, where, you know, you've seen the talent that, and what fighters are already existing, but it'll only continue to grow. Like, there's another generation coming through, and there's some serious talent here. I mean, for such a small country, again, across all sports, you know, there's some like absolutely fantastic athletes here. And I think, now that you can see people getting to the UFC from here, and it's a real attainable thing for people that want them enough, we'll see more guys in the UFC, and, you know, hopefully myself as well included, and I make that transition. And I think, you know, MMA, like, as it's more recognized, we'll have, you know, not only guys, you know, in the UFC and top promotions, but again, at the highest levels of that. And yeah, for sure, I think we'll make a real name and out there so well very soon.
I'll ask you a few more questions and then I'll let you go. So my next question is about fights that are coming up. So mm-hmm. We've got McGregor versus Poirier 2. You know, how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I think Poirier would be the favorite. I would agree with that. You know, I think he's got more there, and especially coming off that momentum. I think because McGregor was knocked out cold, you sometimes see guys lose their chin and become a bit more susceptible to a knockout. Given that McGregor likes the strike, I think he's going to leave himself open there. He doesn't really use his grappling or anything like that. So, whereas Poirier does. So, I mean, he could well go in, just, again, take down McGregor, work the rest on the whole fight, and then finish with striking at any point he wants. So, he's going to have more of an MMA style, like up and down wrestling, striking, whereas McGregor, again, will be halfway predictable, I think, and just stand and strike. So he might make some great, you know, changes to his game plan and maybe outstrike Dustin, but I think Dustin will get the takedowns, maybe grind out a win from decision.
When you're looking at the old McGregor and sort of what went well in the featherweight division, there was a lot of kicks, there was a lot of spin, the tape kick, the front kick. He was doing a lot of those, and recent fights, especially the Poirier one, he didn't really kick very much. Like you said at the very start, it was more like a boxing stance, like quite tall almost. And I don't think that helped.
No, I think that's it. I think he just got pulled a bit too much into his boxing. Again, when it works for you in sparring or it works for you in previous fights, do you think I'll just keep doing that? But you have to remember, it's like, you know, where am I susceptible to here? You know, I've won a couple of fights like this. What will my opponent think? You know, where will he look for weaknesses? So I think he'll adapt much better this time. But yeah, he's leaving himself open with that stance.
And then another one of so supposedly it's a fantasy matchup, and it's John Jones versus Francis. You know, I don't think anything's been agreed there.
It's been agreed.
No, it hasn't been agreed yet. It hasn't still.
I think it's not too far off. I think everyone wants that. So yeah, we could well see it happen. I mean, people are like, oh well, Jones isn't as big as him, but I mean, Jones beat Cormier, you know, twice, and he was the heavyweight champion. As well, apparently Jones has put on a lot of extra weight now. He does look very strong. So I think when you see the two of them side, you know, face off or whatever, I think Jones will look like a heavyweight, like just the same size. So with that in mind, plus his background and his experience and the way he moves and stuff, I would favor Jones. But again, I think for whatever reason, you like to see the underdog win. And I would say Ngannou, like with his knockout power, you know, it would almost be good to see Jones getting knocked out and maybe brought down a level in some ways. But very exciting matchup. But I would say Jones the favorite, but it'd be nice to see Ngannou get the knockout.
I was listening to it was Mike Tyson and Brendan Schaub had Francis on one of their podcasts, and they were talking about the John Jones matchup, and they were sort of talking about how everyone sees like John Jones is not as big because obviously he's fighting at light heavyweight, and Francis butted in and he goes, "Me and John Jones have talked before, and John Jones is the same size as me, you know, like height
That's
wise, you know,
hilarious.
so he's long and rangy." And then you got to sort of look at, you know, John Jones's brothers who are American football players in the NFL. So I think it's going to be very, very exciting, and hopefully it happens soon. And I suppose one of the other fights that I'm excited for, I think, is Masvidal Usman. I think, to be honest, I think Usman wins, but the fight that I want to see after that is Kobe Usman. I think that's a great fight.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a better matchup, to be honest. I think with Masvidal, there'll be a lot of good hype behind it because of the trash talk. But again, I think Usman will just get that wrestling on point and get the win. But yeah, like Colby Covington, like that'll be a good matchup for him. I'd enjoy watching that now.
And the last one I'll ask you about is sort of is a boxing match. It's this weekend. It's at Jake Paul versus Ben Askren this Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. Near forgot about that. That'll be good. That's something else. Like the guy Jake Paul, like, you know, he's something else. But again, I don't know why Ben Askren kind of jumped on board with that. You know, he's not known for being a striker at all. So, but again, saying that, it's not like he's just a wrestler. Like he's been doing MMA for a long time, and he, you know, he's going to have decent striking. But I would still say Askren should get the win. You know, fingers crossed. And I think the whole MMA community is really hoping he does. So it'll be exciting to watch. And of course, I think a lot of people are going to tune in for it. But yeah, that'll be a good match. Like, who do you think will win that yourself?
I would like to see Ben Askren win. I don't really have much time for Jake Paul, to be honest. If just the
Right,
stuff
it's
he
been
puts it,
too much trash talk, and just yeah, it'll be good to see someone knock him out. Like,
But I think Ben Askren will do okay. Like there was so many things like Dana White paying Ben Askren to go over to Freddie Roach to get training there, and I think he was training with some world champion as well. Over there, so I think it'll be good. I think Ben Askren will be, I think, a lot of dirty boxing.
Yeah, no, I think so too. So no, it'll be fun to watch. So also, looking for that.
I think Ben Askren was saying that it is the most money that he has ever received from any fight that he has ever done. By quite
Yeah,
a
probably too.
bit. By
Yeah,
quite a bit.
I know. But that's the entertainment business. So you sell a fight, right? You're gonna get paid.
Well, Andy, I'll let you go. It's been great talking to you, talking about your life and talking about current UFC events. So thank you very much for your time.
No, Josh, thank you, man. I really, really enjoyed the talk, and you know, pleasure and privilege to be on. So, Yeah, well, thank you for having me, and absolute pleasure.
Not a problem. We'll definitely get you on again. Thank you very much.
No worries, man. All right, take care.
Cheers, bye.